Overdue for an oil change, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The podcast that knows tissue is just a sissy word for Kleenex. And now, letting sleeping dogs lie, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And I'm that lazy man, Doug Jones. As my Canadian nephew just told you, I am here to talk about Medicare. And the talking about Medicare is inspired by my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. You can get that at Barnes & Noble if you like the colorful illustrations. Or if you want to spend less money and have the black and white illustrations, you can get a paperback or a Kindle or an Audible book. All of those on sale at Amazon.com. So just go to Medicare for the Lazy Man. And you'll see the vast array of books with that title that are there. You want the books with the red 2021 on the cover. And the reason you want those books right now is because I haven't gotten around to writing the 2022 book. I'm leaving for California in a few days. I'm being spending the holidays being Thanksgiving of 2021, spending that holiday with our daughter and her husband and her two college age sons. One graduated recently. One is in his sophomore year. And we're going to be in Orange County. And I am told that I can go live in Orange County for a week without ever even thinking about putting on a mask, because Orange County is kind of in rebellion to the Democrats that otherwise try to hold sway over the state. So I'm looking forward to that. Of course, when I'm in Arizona, like I am now, I don't see masks almost at all. Occasionally, there'll be an individual wearing a mask. And then I say to myself, well, that's their right. They can wear a mask anytime they want to. And maybe they're really ugly and they're protecting me from having to view their weather-beaten visage. But for the most part, I think people with masks are probably making political statements. And I just avoid them. I stay away. I give them wide berth if I'm walking down the sidewalk. That doesn't happen too often. Basically, in Arizona, we hop into a vehicle, drive wherever we're going, and get out. We don't spend a lot of time walking down sidewalks. Anyway, I am always enthralled by our 30-second radio spot, and I'm hoping that if we're really, really quiet, Randy will play that 30-second spot for us right now. Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. Thank you, Randy. I appreciate that. It is a thing to behold. You had a big hand in making it sound as good as it does, and I appreciate that. So, Randy, why don't you join us here? Turn on your mic and let us know how things are going for you.
Well, it's been a busy day, but, you know, a busy day in Arizona is better than any day anywhere else.
Oh, I got that with you. I'm in full agreement. Now, we're starting to record later than we often do. Often it's middle of the morning, but right now it's early afternoon. So what have you been up to today?
I have been working on various software problems with various other clients that the software was not doing what it said it was going to do, and I had to convince it to do so.
I'm thoroughly shocked that that could ever happen in this modern era.
Oh, yes. Mortifying. Yes, it does. I've told you this before, but no matter how many years I've been in this business, there's one thing that'll fix it all, usually.
That's a big hammer.
The big red button. Hit the big red button and it'll usually fix it.
All right. Now you're dragging me into a non-Medicare related thought process. And I wish my brain would just quiet down, but it never does. So I might have told you that when we arrived back from a summer in Illinois, that my router did not function properly. In fact,
yes, she did.
It turned itself off right at the beginning of June, and it went all summer. I'm paying for internet, and I'm paying for cameras, remote cameras to watch various things in the neighborhood. And I'm paying for all that for nothing when the router doesn't work. And so we get back here, the router was not working. And so I ordered a replacement of identical design, identical company and everything. And the replacement showed up. And so what happened every day, at least once a day, if not more, the router, the new router, would just refuse to function. And I would have to unplug it for 60 seconds, plug it back in, and then everything would eventually work again. You know, 10 minutes later, everything's working fine. And I said to myself, we've got to get rid of this thing and get another one because I don't think it's doing what it's supposed to do. I called the ISP and they would look at all their little dials and things and say, nope, no interruption in your internet. The problem is on your end. And so I said to Mary, you know, get the book out. Tell me if there's anything in the router directions that I should know about. She said, well, you could press the reset button if you like. It says here that's strongly advised. Randy's shaking his head. No, don't ever do that. I had to learn the hard way. So last night,
if you have the chance to push the reset button or slam your foot in the door, take the door.
I wish I had known that. I wish we'd had this conversation yesterday because I did it. I succumbed. We have a friend who's from Philadelphia and she mispronounces half of the words. She succumbs to things. And I succumbed to the temptation because I said, maybe pushing the reset button will make my life better. It actually made my life much worse.
I can just see you now. But it says so in the book, and I would have been, if I was there with you, I'd say, no, Doug, don't hit the button, no.
I can picture you running in slow motion, trying to throw yourself between me and the button. Oh, man. Well, I took it out on Mary. I told her how if she had just returned it when I asked her to return it, instead of, you know, fiddling around hoping that it would fix itself, that we wouldn't have had that problem last night. But really, it was my fault, and I should apologize to her.
It's one of those situations where, you know, and I, again, granted, I've been in the business for 30. I've been a you know, software engineer, hardware engineer, all that for 30 years. So when I call into the help desk of some company, well, sir, would you please get to your, no, we're not going to the router, not touching the router, not even looking at the router. I know that's not my problem. So let me talk to somebody that cares.
Listen, it was very distressing when I finally came to the conclusion that every time I call up like an insurance company, I'd say, your website doesn't work for me. How can I fix it? Or do you have any technical help that can help me deal with the problems I'm having with your website? The first thing they always tell you is, well, delete your cookies. And then I would have
to, is that anything like chuck your cookies?
Easy for Randy to laugh because he's known this for years, but it's, I swear to God, I would delete my cookies and then go, now what? And they'd say, does it work now? No.
Well, okay. That's the only thing on our list, man.
I spend the rest of the day trying to remember the passwords to all the, you know, things that I need passwords for because I deleted all of them.
Yeah, that's exactly. All your password saving has happened in cookies.
So here's some valuable advice for you kids out there. Don't ever push that red reset button or use your paperclip or whatever. And don't delete your cookies. When they tell you to do that, you're talking to somebody like Randy described, somebody who isn't really knowledgeable enough to tell you how to fix a problem or diagnose a problem.
Yeah, I used to, and we'll have to get going here in a second or two, but I used to just lie to them. Now reset your eye. Oh yeah, I just did that. Okay, yeah. Now stand up and twinkle your toes and run around your desk four times. Yep, just did that. Yep, yeah. Is it working? Nope.
Exactly. You can tell when they first say, "Well, did you do all the steps in the direction?" Oh yes, I did every one of them. And
twice.
Yeah, nothing has worked. So now it's up to you, buddy. So that's when they actually have to go to work. They take their feet off their desk and start actually trying to do something.
Well, when I was more adversarial, I used to say, well, I know the problem's not on my end. It's on your end. You know why I know that, buddy?
I've been
a network engineer for 30 years, so I know it ain't my problem.
Okay, we're having a huge problem with our prime forwarding service from the U.S. Postal Department. That's where they bundle up our week's worth of mail in Illinois and ship it to us super prompt. And we pay $22 and change for that every week. And the last 2 weeks, it hasn't shown up. When I finally got to some woman at the post office in St. Charles, Illinois, it's not that big a post office. I got
there like 1,500 people there?
No, I would say 15, maybe 1.5.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I used to know the guy that could do this stuff without me being involved with the computer. His name was Kevin. What a great guy. I'd send him a bottle of booze every Christmas. Well, he up and retired on me. And
darn. Now the mail service is done for St. Charles.
Well, it is, because 2 weeks in a row, we've had to pay our $22 and change and not yet squat. And so this woman said, well, I can tell you exactly why it hasn't functioned, why we've had this malfunction. I don't know exactly the cause. I don't know how to fix it. But our system did not print a label for you.
Oh, no.
And I my mouth was hanging open, and I wasn't even in the same state. I was mortified. I wanted to say, and I didn't say it to her, but do you have a little sticky piece of paper that you could write on? And then
put it
on the box and just shoot it into the
So basically what you're telling me, Doug, is that you're paying $22 for somebody to spit out a label.
I said, how do I get my money back? And she said, well, you can go to the website. Well, there's, right then I stopped paying attention.
You're done.
File a claim against the federal government for your 2 weeks at $22.50 a piece. So that was pretty sad. Pretty darn sad. Okay. So we burned up a lot of our.
We probably should do something, even if it's wrong here. So
let's,
I'm going to say, let's go ahead and get something going on Medicare, because obviously over the last 3 years working with you, I have learned a lot about Medicare, but I'm not an expert like you are, so I'm going to turn it all over to Mr. Jones.
This means he'll be taking a nap. So if you hear snoring, it means he forgot to turn his mic off. Okay, so what do we have for Medicare content today for the podcast? Well, I think we'll make it a short day today. I've got two items that are probably worthy of consideration. One says, for Medicare, having a power of attorney is not enough. Now, this is kind of news to me. I had an episode a few weeks ago, I guess, describing power of attorney and how that can protect one as one has either ongoing illnesses or in the end of life area of needing to have hospice and so forth. The power of attorney means that you are allowed to appoint a proxy who can make your voice heard, make your wishes heard when it comes to courses of treatment offered by medical professionals. In other words, doctors might say, do you want extraordinary life extending measures, or do you want us to just let everything go naturally? And you have your choice as to whether you can have them exert extraordinarily on your body in order to keep you alive longer, or whether you want them to keep their hands, their grubby mitts off of you. So this article says, for Medicare, having a power of attorney is not enough. And it's written by Diane Omdahl. You've heard her name here before. She's in Wisconsin, and she has a fee-based Medicare, I'll figure it out for you, service. If it's something that's a little more complicated than average, like maybe being out of the country or not a resident or whatever, then for a fee, then she will help figure out what you need to do to qualify under the very complex Medicare rules. So reading this article, when it comes to Medicare, a power of attorney has no power. Now, see, this is not what I told people on that episode we did a few weeks ago. It says a power of attorney, a POA, is a powerful thing. A financial power of attorney document allows an appointed person to make financial, legal, and property decisions on another individual's behalf. A person holding another's POA can sell the individual's car to pay medical bills, for example. A medical POA is a durable power of attorney for healthcare. This allows an agent, which would be a trusted friend or family member, to make important and necessary healthcare decisions. If the individual becomes incapacitated or unable to communicate or participate in care, for example, with this authority, a POA can make healthcare decisions for an individual on a ventilator. Establishing powers of attorney must be done while the person is of sound mind and able to make financial and medical decisions. Because of COVID-19, this issue is very important. There's no getting around the fact that the risk for severe illness from this disease increases with age. Somebody should tell the Democrats that. The hospitalization rates for those ages 65 to 74 is 198% or 198 per 100,000 population, as compared to 84 per 100,000 for 40-year-olds. That rate jumps to 513 per 100,000 for those 85 and older. So the hospitalization rate for those 85 and older would be half of 1,000 per 100,000. So that's like one, do the fractions. Let me continue on with the article by Diane Omdahl. We have all read that hospitals do not allow visitors. Relatives must rely on phone calls, FaceTime, or communication with staff to share information and find out what's happening. This lack of access can create some serious challenges in managing a family, dealing with critical business issues, paying bills, the list goes on and on. But here's one concern that may not be on everybody's radar. Take the example of Steve and Susan. I'll bet those are made up names. They're a retired couple whose names were changed for this article. Ah, I was right. Steve, 77 years old, was hospitalized. He did not know that his wife, Susan, was trying to deal with some cost and coverage issues related to his care. I hate the word issues. That's why you're going to hear me manage a big lisp every time that word is used, in my view, incorrectly. Anyway, his wife, Susan, tried calling his plan and Medicare, but could not talk with anyone because she did not have authority to do so. Susan was stunned. Steve had executed powers of attorney. So what was the problem? The problem was that powers of attorney do not stand alone when it comes to Medicare issues. Medicare authorized representative, that's the heading for the next paragraph. By law, Medicare requires a beneficiary's written permission to use or provide personal medical information for any purpose not defined in the privacy notice contained in the Medicare and You handbook. You know, that's the weirdo handbook with a bunch of odd looking people on the cover. And I think I've got one laying around here someplace. It comes out every year. It's called Medicare and You. The feds put it out and it should be pretty much free of charge. A competent person can complete the form called the 1-800 Medicare Authorization to Disclose Personal Health Information. I'm going to name that form again. It's the 1-800 Medicare Authorization to Disclose Personal Information. That's the name of the form. Then, when needed, the representative is authorized to talk with Medicare, research, and choose Medicare coverage, handle claims, even file an appeal. Note these specific instructions for completion of the form. Ooh, I just found a note that I made. I must have read this article before, but probably not on the air. The form number for that form is CMS 10106, and that's the 1-800 Medicare Authorization to Disclose Personal Health Information form. CMS 10106. You put that into Google, and you're going to have that form staring at you from your computer screen. So the form, note these specific instructions for completion of the form. One, check whether you authorize Medicare to release limited or any information. If limited, identify the type of information such as claims, eligibility, or premiums. Here's another point. You can identify by means of this form whether the authorization applies for a specified period of time or indefinitely. And third, you can submit the form by mail to Medicare. There is no fax or email submission. The individual has the right to revoke this authorization at any time. For those no longer able to give consent, their personal representative can complete the form and attach a duly executed power of attorney. Medicare plans, that's the next heading. There's one more authorization to address, and that deals with individual Medicare plans. Medicare Advantage, Part D prescription drug, or Medicare supplement. Every plan has an authorization form, and it goes by many different names, such as authorization to share personal information or authorization to share protected health information. This form would provide the authority to speak to plan representatives about claims or coverage, update contact information, and more, depending on the individual plan. To start this process, check the plan's member information or contact a customer service representative. And the next heading is your to-do list. That turns out to be the final heading of the article. It says you never know what's around the corner, so the time to prepare is before you get there. Take these three important steps. One, establish or update your financial and medical powers of attorney. Two, identify and designate your authorized Medicare representative. And three, contact your Medicare plan or plans. Remember, that was the, if you have a Medicare Advantage plan, a standalone Part D prescription drug plan, and a Medicare supplement plan. You have to contact all of those plans to complete the authorization forms. So that's Diane Omdahl's suggestions for maintaining a smooth transition in case bad things happen to you, the listener. You'll be ready for your Medicare advocate to step in and make the decisions that you would make yourself if you were not incapacitated. And remember, that form that she said that everybody could use is form number CMS 10106. You put that into a search engine, and I bet you're going to find that form quite easily. So how are we looking time-wise?
We're out.
Okay. Well, I'm going to save all this exciting Medicare information I have for our next recording session then.
Okay. So I have, you know me.
I always know you, Mr. Curious.
I always have to stir the muck. So what happens if, God forbid, you're single, you don't have any family, all your family's gone, it's just you.
Okay.
And then you get run over by a, let's say you're on Social Security and you got Medicare and you got all that good stuff. Uh-huh. You've been paying your bills religiously, looking forward to the day that you might be able to get some good out of all this stuff you're paying for. Then you get hit by a bus. Yeah. So you've got no associates. You've got nobody that you signed off as being your representative. Nobody, no how, no way. What happens?
Well, first of all, we have to rely on the medical professionals to treat you in accordance with the Hippocratic Oath, which has a bunch of, you know, neat qualifiers in it, like first do no harm and go out of your way to cure what you find rather than make it worse and all that stuff. So basically, you don't have a choice. Now, let's suppose that you realized that you had a reason not to have them do their jobs. In other words, they're trained to save life and to keep trying until the very end, and no matter how much damage it might do. Well, I've seen people on ventilators, and it's not pleasant. It's entirely possible that if you had an opinion that was contrary to what the Hippocratic Oath would tell these doctors to do, that you might want that knowledge to be given to them. Now, they are not able to use the knowledge from you because you're unconscious. So then here comes your buddy who says, you know, or even your wife who says, oh, no, he would not want to have extraordinary measures taken. He doesn't want, you know, he's a skinny little guy, and he doesn't want some 200-pound nurse jumping on his chest trying to get his heart started again. And so they cannot accept that from just some person walking in saying that she's your wife or saying that she's your pal. They have to have documentation because there are so goddamn many, pardon my French, there are so many lawyers out there looking for somebody to sue that they're going to be scrutinized by attorneys hoping that there's grounds for a lawsuit, no matter what they do. If they try too hard, if they don't try hard enough. So if your wishes are not fulfilled as part of their duties, then you have to have somebody who explains your wishes to them. And if you haven't done that, then, you know, you and the bus and the unfortunate aftermath are just going to fall into the Medicare or the medical machine.
And they're going to keep pumping you full of stuff until there's nothing to pump.
Absolutely. Every time my mother went in the hospital, they would tell me, look, she's very frail. Her heart's going to give out. And if we try to resuscitate her, it's going to do more damage. It's going to break ribs. It's going to cause her immense pain. Well, I would say, all right, then you have my permission not to resuscitate. Do not resuscitate. And she, you know, recovered herself almost every time. I say almost because that one last time.
Well, there was one time.
Yeah.
That she didn't recover as quickly as she would have liked.
Exactly. But they used to tell me she's going to croak, and she didn't croak. She come home after a week or so. They'd fill her full of steroids. Her lungs would start working again. She'd come back home. And, you know, then she would resume her normal life of having her reading material in her left hand and her oxygen mask and then her cigarette in the right hand. And
well, God bless her.
Absolutely.
That's a woman after my own heart.
I think if she had tried to quit smoking at that point, it would have killed her.
Would have killed her. Yeah. So as you were telling that, giving me that kind answer about, you know, what do you do? I'm just envisioning, you know, my little brain works in strange ways, but I'm just envisioning that this guy that got hit by the bus, he was married, but he didn't give his wife any, you know, Medicare authority to do anything. So here she comes and she's going, no, really, Harry would not want to be on that ventilator. Hurry up and unplug him because I've got a date.
She's all gussied up and it's Saturday night. And she's going out to the bars. Yeah, we call her a cougar.
Yeah, you got that right.
Even if she was the most sincere person concerned with Harry's wishes, wanting to convey his wishes to the doctors, without Harry's signature acquired on the proper form back in the old days when he was hale and healthy and could, you know, fight his way out of a wet paper bag, without that, then she doesn't really have a leg to stand on. She cannot convince them to do what Harry would have wanted them to do. She has to rely on their Hippocratic oath and their duties as legally enforced by their hospital or whoever they work for.
Yep. You're absolutely right. Well, you know something? We've got some folks to thank. Most likely our podcast audience. And we thank them every time they join us because they make this a lot more fun and a lot more worthwhile, because sometimes you get the idea that you're pumping the pump and it's a dry hole. But anyway.
What? Where did that come from?
So anyway, thanks everybody for joining us. We enjoy and we appreciate every one of you. And we have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones. But before we sign off for good, go to Amazon.com, buy yourself some books. I can't encourage you strongly enough, because the holidays are coming and they make great stocking stuffers. So go out and get yourself some books, some audios, you know, whatever you want to get, whatever form, go out and get them, because they are well worth your money and well worth your time. And I would recommend them for anyone, because anytime Doug doles me out one, I end up giving it away because somebody says, I'd like to read that. And once they get their hands on it, folks, it never comes back my way.
I'm pretty sure that if he actually paid for one, that it would be locked away safely and nobody else would ever get their hands on it. But so, Randy, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for joining us. You are just finishing up listening to Jug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma. And today he's stuck with the same old title that he's always had. Chief Executive Officer of Medicare for the Lazy Man.com.
Bye-bye.